So welcome back, everybody. It's time to meet our community, the Hispanic business community here in Orange County, powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center, with a special episode today with some special friends and our special host, Ruben Franco. Hey, Ruben. Who'd you bring?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Good. Along one of your old friends here.
Yeah, full disclosure, I have a former fraternity brother of mine, Kevin Abbott, who's here. Kevin and I go way back, more than three decades back, I hate to say. But we do. Went to UCLA together, and we're in the same fraternity together, and known each other for years. Know his wife, Julie.
Yeah, you dated my wife, yeah.
I dated your wife, Julie.
And I'm still here. That's how good a guy you are.
That's how good a guy you are. Yeah, and good a guy you are here after that happened. So. But thank you for being here. We appreciate
my
it.
My pleasure.
You know, this is our podcast that we bring out to our community, and you know, Kevin is a very famous showrunner, one of the top showrunners in all of TV, and
all right, I'll take it. Okay,
we're very fortunate to have him, and we, you know, we have a lot of students we work with throughout, you know, all the universities here, and so they'll be glad to hear from you what you have to say about the industry and the business, and maybe some little advice too as well. So we look forward to the conversation. But what we'd like to start the podcast off with usually is just tell us a little bit about yourself and your family, and let everybody know who you are.
Yeah, my name is Kevin Abbott, and I've been doing, you know, TV writing for, 34 years now, 33, 34 years. I started right out of college, basically 6 months out of college. Met my wife, Julie, at UCLA. We're both Bruins. We've been married for 35 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Three kids. Two of them are in the business, my girls. Katie's a manager at a talent agency slash production company called Circle of Confusion that's famous for Walking Dead. And my daughter, Jessie, is a development exec over at Capital Entertainment, which is a production company that does tons of TV shows. You know, they just, their big one just now was Oprah Winfrey's Women of the Movement. No grandkids yet. I'd like to have grandkids. I'm pushing, but you know, I've turned into that guy. You know,
if who just got married? Was it
Jessie? Jessie just got married. Yeah, she got married just before COVID hit, October of 2019.
Okay,
so just before it hit, we got in under the wire. I've been running TV shows now probably, I guess 95. I've been running various TV shows. It's been a wild ride. It's not something.
We got to get them to list a couple of them here. We got to get them to rattle off some of the shows.
Tell us a little. Recently, you worked. Obviously, you were the showrunner for Last Man Standing with Tim Allen.
Yep, that
Nancy
was
Nancy Travis and Hector Elizondo.
Yeah,
and
just, fantastic.
One of my favorite shows of all time, because I'll have to ask you this question just because politically Tim was a conservative.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
and I think he is personally, but
he is personally.
But,
yeah,
but I mean, on the show, and he was. You know, he didn't pull any punches on it.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I got to tell you, one of the interesting things for me about doing that show was that angle on it because, you know, I'm left of center, you know. When Julie and I graduated, actually, one of us was a Republican, one of us was a Democrat. We couldn't remember which one was which because they used to be much closer. It used to be much closer, the parties.
Yeah.
And now they've, as everybody knows, they've gotten a little further apart. So going in, you know, struggle is the wrong word. It was a challenge to make certain that I always made Tim look, to not make him look bad, basically, to not let any bias I might have about any particular subject color that character's viewpoints, you know?
Yeah.
I like to think I did a good job on it. I would read further right wing websites, and I'd watch Fox News and whatnot just to kind of get a feel for what was being talked about and how certain people felt, you know. And what I'd tell my writers all the time is, look, you know, certain of the writers had a real problem with the character, and I'd say, you know, you got to love the characters to write them. You got to love them, you know. Find something you love in the character and build around that, because if you don't like the character, that's going to come out. It's going to come out in your writing.
Right.
So you got to actually like the character. and hopefully you love them. And I loved that character. And that character was Tim and Tim. I love Tim too. They're good-hearted people. That character was always coming from a point of view of wanting what's best for his family and for the community. And I didn't find it difficult to write that character at all. A lot of it was just kind of, we viewed it as Tim was a traditionalist, is how we kind of called it, which is, he's not against change and he's not against doing things differently, but he just wants to pump the brakes a little bit because the law of unintended consequences, that's you never right. know what's going to happen, right? Right? And we'd get to do the law of unintended consequences of what happened with these things. So, yeah, it was, I really enjoyed that time. I really enjoyed that time with Tim. He is one of those guys that has whatever that it thing is, Mm-hmm. I used to go in with Tim because, if he was just kind of flat or a little down in show night or trying to remember his lines, I'd tell him, well, say it however you'd want to say it, unless it was a word-specific joke, which I tried to keep away from Tim because he didn't memorize his lines too well. but I'd say, say how it's going to come out of your mouth, because I want it to feel natural. I don't want you remembering your lines, and I want you coming out because I said, I need the twinkle, Tim. I said, you're a really good actor, right? I said, but there's 10,000 really good actors in Hollywood. I need the star, because there's very few of those. And you're a star when you twinkle, when you turn it on, when you're in the moment, when you're feeling it and having fun with it. That's what I need. And he would bring it, man. And he did have the twinkle. He absolutely had the twinkle. Same with I was on Roseanne for a couple of years. And Roseanne, for as difficult as she could be, had the twinkle. She had that thing, whatever it is that just makes you look at these people. I had my showrunner on the show, Rob Ulam, who was great. He used to say that what stars have, the quality that they have, is they can make you, it's like a baby, a newborn, they can make you feel whatever emotion they're feeling. If they're overjoyed and happy, much like then you're happy. It just makes you feel happy. If they're crying, you are going to cry. If they're angry, it's going to make you angry. They have that ability to kind of make you feel that way, and I think that's true. Can I tell a quick Roseanne story?
Sure, absolutely.
So we were, it was the second season. Roseanne had she'd come in at the beginning of the season and say, I want to do a show about racism, or, I want to do a show about whatever, we'd have to come up with something. And usually it was always about more challenging subjects. But this one, she comes in and she says, I want to do a show about abortion. And we're like, I want my character to have an abortion. And we'd spent the previous season trying to get that character pregnant. So we sit down and we try to break a story. How can we justify this character who's just spent a year trying to get pregnant having an abortion?
Right.
And we failed. We absolutely failed. So we had to go out to her house in Brentwood. We're supposed to pitch her the stories, Rob, me, and two of the other writers. And we get out there. We're basically all going, okay, just before we go in, said, look, we're probably going to get fired today because we have to tell her we can't do this. But we all agree we can't do this, right? We can't have this character have an abortion. We're like, yeah, we all agree. So we go in the house. She lets us in. Just as she lets us in, hey, come on in. We got some muffins and stuff in here. Just as she comes in, her daughter that she gave up for adoption, Brandy, and had just rediscovered that summer, and is now she's staying with him. She comes in the back door, and she's clearly been out all night. And she and Roseanne start screaming at each other. Where have you been, you bleep and bleep? And, shut up, you. And just screaming, screaming, screaming. Brandy storms off. And then we're like, oh, man, we're going to tell Roseanne we can't do this right now. And she's all right, come on in. We go sit down. Rob hems and haws for like 5 minutes. And finally says, we just can't figure out how to do this. And she goes, oh, didn't I tell you? I don't want to do the abortion anymore. They shot that abortion doctor in Iowa. I don't want that to happen to me.
Oh, my God.
Like, really? She goes, yeah, have Darlene have an abortion.
So, holy cow.
Yeah. But you know what? She had that star thing. We walked out of there. The point of that was we walked out, and we were just swapping stories at that point with Roseanne, and we walked out so happy. And so, like, oh, that was great. And we got outside and was like, oh, I feel dirty. We were so convinced she was going to be awful. And now, now she's got us. She got us back, and we're back in her, Oh, I love this woman. She just had that power. And Tim had the power, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He always says, it's so funny because, he's telling me, two of his most iconic roles are Santa Claus and Buzz Lightyear. Mm-hmm. And he always gets requests. Can you send a message, voicemail of Buzz Lightyear or something like that? And he'll do it. I mean, he, again, really good guy. But he doesn't particularly like children. You know, he doesn't. Okay. You know, he doesn't. You know, he's just he doesn't like the social interaction. He doesn't like other people's kids that much. And he, of course, he plays two characters that he is going to get approached by kids all the time.
Absolutely.
All the time. Yeah. So, and you know, to his credit, he never takes it out on them. But he goes, "Ah, I hate that."
Yeah, I was just watching the Santa Claus the other, because it's been on every night for the last 5 weeks.
Exactly,
or whatever.
Right.
And he kneels down to this little girl who thinks he's Santa Claus, but nobody else, because he doesn't look like Santa Claus.
Right.
And it's a very warm, it's one of the best moments in the movie.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, wow, that's, you know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you say that in real life, he's not really.
Well, you know, again, with other people's kids, you know, it's funny. He really, with the actresses on the show who played his daughters, he really took kind of like he felt very much the father figure to them.
Sure.
And when we'd do a scene where, you know, he'd have some emotional scene with, say, you know, Caitlin Dever, phenomenal.
Great young actress.
Yeah. They would move me to tears, man. They would really connect, you know, and because he felt that way about them, and he could convey that. You know, he really, you know, he was kind of devastated when the show ended. I mean, we were on for 10 seasons. That's forever. I don't know if shows are going to do that anymore in the streaming world, but you know, he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I love coming in here and being here. I mean, it's like, well, sorry, Tim. I'll work with you again if you got something going. But, you know, he just forms those connections with people. There was a really good guy there. I mean, I got to tell you. I mean,
well, it definitely comes across, you know, on screen that he's just, he's one of the funniest men I've ever seen on TV and movies. And
there's a lot of people out there that come across great as great people who really aren't.
Yeah, Paul and I were talking about that earlier, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I'd almost say more. I always tell people, don't meet the people you really love, you admire, because they're gonna let you down most of the time.
Yeah, that's true. I think you're right. Well, you're talking about, you know, comedies and, you know, what is there's not that many three camera shows anymore, right?
No, it's there's not a lot of them. I mean, I actually did a show called Cool Kids with Charlie Day. That I went on and did it because basically I supervised it, and they're not only not that many shows out there, but there's not that many people that know how to do them anymore.
Okay.
Basically, the Fox executives were telling me, well, you know, you're teaching us how to do this because none of us have done a four camera show, and I'm like, really? You know, I mean, it just that the framework that used to be there, where, you know, when I started 34 years ago, you know, you worked your way up from staff writer. When I started, there were only three networks. Fox came along the next year. And, you know, you learned your craft. You learned the ability to do this. And just, also, you know, just the things of, like, when we were shooting the pilot to Cool Kids, I said, you know, we're not going to shoot the whole show in front of the audience. So we've got sets that are out of the audience's view, and I'm going to pre-shoot those and just run them back. And they're like, well, no, we won't see the whole thing. It's like, no, you don't understand. This is not good for the audience. It will kill the energy in the audience. Yeah. There's a reason to have an audience, and that's to kind of bring that play-like energy, that feeling of you're with the crowd at the game. And you don't want to waste that. You know, you want to keep this entertaining for them. So we're gonna show it to them and move on. And I had to fight them on it, but they eventually agreed. And you know what? They're like, yeah, you were right. You're absolutely right. Make sure you're going to shoot those scenes in front of the audience that they can enjoy. Right. You know, with Tim, we'd always try to pre-shoot some scenes so that we could get through the night quicker, and then once again keep it entertaining for the audience. But I always had to make sure that, you know, I tried to get the scenes that Tim was in that are in front of the audience, so primarily the kitchen scene and the living room scene,
right,
and not so much the workplace, although I could use his office more, but tried to keep those in front of the audience because I know those are more, look, they came to see Tim Allen. And those are going to be more interesting to them. They may love the whole show and the cast and everything, but, you know, Tim's the reason that we were there, and him was the reason we were on the air, you know? So I wanted to give them, the audience, that reward, you know, that they came to see. Yeah, I want you to walk out of here going, oh, my God, that was so great. That was, we had to see Tim Allen, and he talked to us, and, you know, because Tim would do a little bit of warm-up. He always told his potato joke, you know, and would try to, he loved interacting with the audience, too, you know? So it was it was a lot of fun. But will it come back? I think it might come back, just to be honest. I mean, my career has seen kind of the pendulum swing on for camera. It was big when I started and dominant, and then single camera came in, and that pretty much dominated for 10 years or so. And then reality shows came in and kind of took up that space. Ultimately, I think there is something different and better that four camera does as opposed to single camera. It's more of a writer's medium, I think, because we are more like a play. We don't get to go everywhere. We don't get to show you every space. So we have to describe what is happening outside of what you see very often, and we get to be more, the actors, the characters have to speak more deeply in some ways, for the good ones, obviously, the good shows. And I think that makes it, I think that's, it's more interesting for a writer, quite honestly. I did My Name is Earl for a year, and great show and everything, but it really wasn't as rewarding. I never felt closer to factory work than when I was doing that show, because you didn't have show night, which I love. Show night is, I always say, it's the cookie, our reward at the end of the week for working hard is that you get to come in here, and this audience gets to give you, show you the love. Look, comedy writers, I say they're all messed up human beings. They're all in a lot of pain, and the only way they know how to deal with it is to spread it around. So they're all kind of damaged people, and this is the way they get love, is people laughing at what they've done and feeling the emotion that you wanted to feel when you're trying to hit it. I just love that. My wife said she's never seen me happier than when I'm standing at the monitor and the show's going well, and just, I apparently mouth all the lines as the actors are doing them. But it's a rush that I just don't get anywhere else,
Yeah, well, you were nice enough to invite us to one of the tapes.
I remember.
It was the first episode of, I forget what, season 9 or...
It was season 8, 9, 8, I think, yeah, 9.
Yeah, but... It was great. It was an awesome episode, and I told Julie, I sent Julie a text afterwards, and I said,
what? You're texting my wife?
Well, there you go again.
Ah, man.
There you go. No, but I just, maybe I messaged her. I just said, Kevin was fantastic. I mean, he just, there was a certain, they were talking about like James Burroughs being a concerto, conductor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed that with you in that episode, how you related to Tim Allen and Nancy Travis, and like in between takes, and just the camaraderie between, and then how you would get another take out of it. It was even better than the first, and there was just a certain joy in your face that I noticed. And I just thought you had a command. You weren't even the director of the episode.
Well, that's the other thing. Writers, especially in four camera, we're much more in control of the medium. My directors were all great and everything, but I felt, I had the, because we didn't have a house director. We had, directors that came in, and they do like five, Victor Gonzalez did a bunch for us, and Victor was great.
He's done a lot of stuff,
But because Tim, as great a guy as I think he is also, he's got his idiosyncrasies, and he has a tendency to want to say no to whatever it is you're bringing in. The first year that I ran the show, I think I was batting 0% on the changes that I tried to give him, because he didn't trust me yet, you know? By the end, he totally trusted me, but I knew how to relate to him, to how to say to, because he believed that I told him once, I said, Tim, even if I didn't like you, and I do, I know you don't trust writers, but even if I didn't like you, it's in my best interest to make you look as good as possible. I need you to look as good as possible.
Sure.
So even if I didn't like you, I would be trying my best. When I'm coming in here, I'm trying to make you look as good as possible. And he finally understood that, but he also understood that when I'm coming in, I'm not saying you have to do this. I'm coming in and saying, hey, how about this line? What do you think about this? Can you have fun with that? And he'll respond, and he'll want to add, because he's a great, very creative, funny guy. And it was when we could build that trust between us that kind of took off. So I always felt like if he did great and I love the take, I'm going to walk in and say, that was a great take, man. It made me, that was fantastic. He needs to hear that. And if it didn't work, then it's up to me to walk in and go, hey, not your best, man. I need the twinkle. I need the star twinkle.
And you could tell that to somebody like that.
Absolutely.
Even at that level.
Not at first, but when we got to a level of trust that, because he knows I'm telling him, that's not a take I can use. That's flat. I know you can do better than this. You know, with Nancy, Nancy's just a consummate pro. Nancy, I enjoyed so much. The problem was I have a very loud laugh, and I'm off. I'm off stage, right? Right. If you listen to any shows I've worked on, you can usually hear that. Ah! Yeah. But Nancy would hear me laughing at her stuff, which would make her laugh, so she would break. Mm. So it was always this thing of, you know, she tried to hold on at a spot where I'm really enjoying it. But, you know, you could give them stuff, as well as almost all of the kid actors. They were just great, but you had to kind of approach them each in their own way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, show running is... I would say I actually would prefer to be the number two on a show. That's actually my preferred job. Really? Yeah, because, you know, the pay is not that much better as a showrunner. I mean, it's good, don't get me wrong, but it's not that much better. And really, when you're the number two to a writer that you respect, who respects you, you get to do all that stuff that I got into the business to do anyway, to do the writing, mm-hmm. to come up with the stories and the jokes. When you become showrunner, you now have to do all this other stuff. It has nothing to do with writing. Yeah. That is so irritating and awful, and I hate it. You know, part of it's just the production side of things and dealing with all the budgets and the physical act of, here's a scene I wrote that takes place in a laundromat. You know, how many washing machines do you want there? Do you want the washer dryers there?
Yeah.
You know, what color scheme do you want on the actors on wardrobe? It's like, you know, you can't really see me, but I don't know wardrobe. I'm not gonna, right. You know. So that stuff all just drives me nuts. And part of it that used to drive me nuts that I came to really enjoy was managing the cast, was figuring out, you know, how to get each actor to feel safe. Because that's a lot of it, I think. A lot of it is just making them feel safe.
Trust
you know,
you,
that
yeah.
I'm not going to send you out there with something that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And if in front of the audience, it, you know, for whatever reason it didn't work, I'm going to figure out why it didn't work, and we're going to change it, you know, and we're going to make certain that you look good, you know? Managing the cast is it's a big, you know, it can, my wife would always show, she came to almost every show and she'd say, is it a good show? And I say, well, it is on paper, you know, and now it's out of my, now the actors have to do it. How it actually ends up,
right.
That'll be up to the actors, you know?
Is there ever, like, do you ever go into like a Monday when you do the table read or whenever the day is and just go, there is nothing on paper here that we could use.
Oh, yeah.
All. I mean, just like zero almost. You
yeah.
To start from.
We call it a page one, and we've done
really?
That. We had one, very little on Last Man Standing. We had one on Reba that we did, that we had an episode where Reba, one of her old friends had hurled flames that Brock had stolen her from, had passed away. Mm. And we read it at table. And it was, you know, no pun intended, but it was death. It was awful. It was just flat. And it's like, this does not work. And it's a story problem. It ain't just fixing some words.
Yeah.
So we went back. We said, okay, you know, we have to do notes after. We have the table reading. And then the network and studio will give us their notes and thoughts. And I'll tell them what I'm planning on doing. And then you go back and rewrite. Well, this one I said, just don't worry about notes. This is all going to change. It's not going to be a word that's the same. And went back and had to re-break the story completely, you know, which we did. And we wrote it and... next day, it didn't really work either, but we had it changed enough that we knew where the roadmap was.
Right.
We could see it, and it wound up being a really good show. We had one on Last Man with the morning of the table read. We'd read on Wednesday mornings, and then they'd rehearse Thursday, Friday, and they'd do run throughs for me and the writers where they would perform it for us so that we could see if it worked or not. And then Monday was camera blocking and pre shoot, and then Tuesday would be show and show night. Wednesday morning, we go to table. And I get a call as I'm walking in the door that Tim's in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they don't know what's wrong with him. So they don't know what's going to happen. Now, on a show called Last Man Standing, when the last man ain't standing,
yeah.
It becomes a little difficult, right? And we did the table read, and I said, well, let's hear what we can hear. And, you know, we got done with it, I talked to, we were on Fox at the time, and I said, you know, insurance would cover if we had to shut down for a week. But, you know, it's expensive. They prefer not to do that.
Right.
So I said, give me an hour. Let me see if I can just rework this. If we can figure out a path forward on it. Which we did. We wound up finding out a path forward. And we just rewrote it all that night, and it takes, obviously, there a bit longer. But we just switched roles, and we had Tim do something that we'd done on Roseanne, which was we had Tim drop in. We had like he'd be at the beginning of a scene. He was you know, trying to get there. And we said, we'll shoot this part, these parts, when he gets back. And it wound up being, you know, the network loved it. They thought it was really good.
What was the episode?
The episode was Ed is getting married to Nancy's mom, to Vanessa's mom.
Yeah, okay.
And Tim is stuck up and he gets snowed in and he has to try to get back to the, and Ed winds up in the hospital.
Yeah, so Ed's in the hospital.
Ed's in the hospital, right. And they have the wedding ceremony in the hospital. Yeah, but, you know, Tim, we had to take Tim completely out of that.
Wow.
And we had one on Roseanne, my first year there. We were there and it was the sixth or seventh episode. And the Emmys were on the night before. And she won that year for Best Actress in a Comedy. Okay. First time she'd ever won. And I remember looking at my wife and saying, oh, okay, it's going to be a good week. Because you may not know this, but Roseanne could be tough on writers. So I'm saying, oh, it's going to be a good week. She's going to be in a good mood. And we go in, and we're sitting at table. We used to do table reads on the set there. And Roseanne's not there, and she's not there. And finally, Tom Arnold comes in, and this is when they were married. And Tom goes, oh, let's just go ahead. You know, we'll do it without Rosie. She's not here right now. And we're like, okay, you know, kind of pointless because, you know, to not hear what she's going to do, right? Midway through the table read, we see Roseanne poke her head out from behind the set. Go, Tom, Tom. Tom gets up and goes, all right, just keep going, just keep going. I'm like, all right. And the cast is reading, and her stand-in's reading her part. And they're screaming at each other back there. Some huge, huge fight. And we hear her, you know, storm off, and he comes back and goes, oh, don't worry about it. So we go back to the writer's room. We're like, okay, well, what are we going to do? You know, how are we going to rewrite this? And Rob gets a call, and he comes back in, and he says, everybody but Kevin and Miriam and Eric, go home, and I'll call you and let you know what's going on for the week. And we're like, what's going on? He's like, well, this can't get out there because Carsey Werner's in negotiations with ABC for a three-year pickup. So they don't want people to know that, you know, Roseanne's had a breakdown. And she's going to be hospitalized for a little while.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. And we're like, what? They don't know how long this is going to be. But nobody can know, so you need to write a new episode without her.
Just like that.
Yeah, hey, sure. We didn't have any in the bank that didn't have Roseanne in them, you know? So, we had to scramble. It wound up being a very good episode. It's Vicki Lawrence was in it, and it was Dan. Vicki Lawrence was one of Dan's old flames, and she shows up, and then Roseanne comes back. He doesn't cheat or anything like that because Dan loved Roseanne, but he winds up having very creative sex with Roseanne when she comes home that evening, and she's all thrilled about it. And then Jackie reveals that no, it was, you know, he was thinking about her. You cheated in your mind, yeah. And what we did is we did the same thing. We shot scenes with her to, you know, she'd walk out of a scene or something like that.
Right.
But, you know, those days, you hate to see them, but you never know when they're coming. You know, you never really know.
Yeah.
It's amazing how often you can get a script at table that everybody's read and gone, oh, yeah, this is really good. It's really tight. And then it reads and you go, that didn't work. And you go, yeah, there's a huge fundamental flaw here that we, you know, it's going to take a lot of writing to fix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's a... you and I were growing up, you said there were three stations and it became Fox as well. And then now there's, I forget how many scripted shows there were back then. There's like over 500 scripted shows.
Yeah.
Most of them, you know, the kind of limited series and streaming. And it's changed quite a bit since you've been in it.
Business is entirely different. Yeah.
What are you, I know you did Last Man Standing. What are you working on now? What are you thinking about doing now? Or, I mean, I don't even know. I didn't ask you on purpose ahead of this podcast just so we could get it live. But
well, I'm actually working right now. I did the final season of Last Man was during COVID, and that was just a really tough year in the sense that, we didn't have show nights because we couldn't have audiences.
Right, right.
So it really was just a drudge, you know, and it was just me and my number two, Matt Berry. We're the only ones in the offices doing the writing and you know, all of the protocols and the testing and whatnot. It just was, it kind of burned me out that year.
Yeah.
So I took a year off just to recharge. And right now I'm working on a project that I'm probably going to take out beginning of next year with Reba again. Reba wants to do another show.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So we've been working on a show together, and but I like it a lot. You know, and if that doesn't go, then probably beginning of next season, although there really aren't seasons anymore.
No, there's not.
You know, I might go try to run. I mean, like I said, I'm kind of getting at the stage of my career where show running takes, it takes your entire focus. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it really does command your life in so many ways. And as a writer, when I'm writing, you know, you're, as the showrunner, you basically write every episode in a sense, and that you, it all has to work for you. You rewrite them all. I don't stop thinking about them. You know, my wife will complain, and she would go like, she'll be telling me something, and then and it's, you know, finish, and I'm like, okay, is this funny? She's like, were you listening? Yeah, I heard it all. I just need, this is in my head, and I need to get it out. It just takes over everything, and I'm less willing to do that than I used to be. I mean, if I could find consulting gigs on it and just help people out, because, you know, there aren't that many people who know how to do four camera anymore, that would be preferable to me. But I always wind up helping out, and then I wind up running the show at some point, you know, and it's just, it just becomes, so anyway, I mean, if I can get the Reba show going, that's when I would be willing to go ahead and run
and do the show
and do the energy of it. Yeah.
Got it.
But I'm constantly, I mean, I like the streaming, idea, because the idea of doing 8 or 10 episodes as opposed to 22 is great. I mean, we usually have, pre-production is about 6 weeks before production starts. And I like to have 8 stories broken in some form. So that'll mean, like, you know, I'll have 3 scripts, a couple of outlines, and then the notion of the 8th one. So it would be no problem doing that. It'd be done practically in preseason, you know. But 22... usually, you know, if you ever watched seasons of shows that were 22, usually the ones in the middle are a little weaker, and the reason that is because the writers are getting tired. What happens is they have all this great stuff from pre-production when they had plenty of time and they were well rested and coming off hiatus, and that all goes in like the first 5-6 shows, right?
Yeah.
And then they're kind of going, now these are the ideas that weren't good enough to be the first ones, right? The next batch is those ones, and they're going through those. And then by the time you get to 13, you're exhausted. It's, you know, you still can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, and you just want to, you know, that's why those shows kind of suck. Once you get to the back 9, once you get to like 15 or 16, it's like, oh, I can see the end again.
Yeah.
You kind of get some more energy. But that's why I'd prefer to do 8 or 10.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for, we have a lot of, you know, students here in Orange County, and all over Southern California, obviously, but we're here on the campus of UCI, but there's also Chapman here who has a great film school, and Fullerton, and any advice you have to young people breaking in, like the way, I mean, I don't know if it's, you consider it's changed a bit since you broke in three decades ago, and anything that they should be focused on? And
well, I'll tell you, I mean, it somewhat depends on what you want to do or be, you know. I mean, I'll give you from the writer's perspective, if you want to be a writer, the first thing you should do before doing anything else is write.
Yeah.
Write, you know. I mean, you need to get that skill going and get that muscle working, you know. And I think it is a muscle, you know. It is something you've got to constantly do to keep sharp. So write. And then you're going to have a spec script. You're going to have something to show people. And it shouldn't be an original. It shouldn't be an original just because if you're trying to get on a series, if you want employment, you know, if you want to be a movie writer, it can be an original. If you want to be a TV writer, you need to demonstrate that you can write in other people's voices. Mm. You know, if you ever hear a Woody Allen film or, you know, an Aaron Sorkin, that's just, all those characters are them. You know, there's just them speaking. You
Absolutely.
Know, it's their rhythms and whatnot. Well, that's not going to work. It can't be your voice because it's not going to be your show that you're going on to work on originally. So you have to demonstrate that you can take other characters and write them faithfully and believably. And then once you get that, and make sure that thing's as good as it can possibly get before you... The big hurdle is going to be, how can I get somebody to read this that knows what's going on?
Yeah.
Traditionally, I think that the path that's been taken by most of the people that I know that have gotten into the business in the last 10 years or so is going to work on a production, trying to get a PA job, trying to get an assistant job, trying to do anything that can put you in contact with people that you can ask as a favor, can you give this a read? Because I can tell you, you know, when staffing season would come around, you know, my office would be lined with scripts, you know, 3 feet high to read. I used to tell agents, all the agents in town, call you and say, what do you need? And I'd say, I need this. I only need this and this. You know, send me the one you think is best. The one client, I'm not going to tell anybody who you did, you know.
Right.
But if you send me eight scripts saying, oh, well, can you just read all these? I'm not going to read it. Yours goes to the bottom of the pile.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the time. I literally can't get through all of these things. I'd have assistants helping me out reading it and saying if it, you know, the ones that clearly aren't going to work.
Right.
But you kind of need to have somebody you trust that has an ability to differentiate good and bad that can read it for you. And the only way to do that is to try to find a job that's probably non-writing that puts you in contact with them.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah. The other thing you can do is there's a lot of writers programs out there. Disney has them, Warner Brothers, Writers Guild has them. Those also, I think, can be doors that can be opened. I mean, I've hired people out of those programs because they're also subsidized, so the studio is more willing to hire them. You know, you can go, well, they're not going to cost the studio. Disney program's going to pay for the first year. You can get shots out of that too. You'd have to submit something to them. I don't know how the process works, how they do the choosing, but those are the two ways I know that the most people that have had success getting into the business doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great advice.
Yeah. Don't just walk up into anybody or just send somebody your thing. It's not going to work. They're just going to toss it out. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. You know, I've had people put scripts in my mailbox and I can't read them. You know, legally, right. I can't. I put myself at risk. And, you know, the upside of the chances of that script being so brilliant that I have to have this person, it just, you know, I'm not going to take that chance. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, we appreciate you being here. I mean, this went by really fast, unfortunately.
I can talk a lot, can't I?
you're
a writer, I can talk a lot.
You can talk a lot. That's right. Writers are usually...
Yeah, you go sit me in my office alone and let me brood for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was great catching up with you two personally since you and I have known each other for a long time. Appreciate you being on and admired the success you've had. I mean, because I remember you when you were in school.
So. Yeah. Nobody saw it coming.
We didn't see that. Wow. What the hell? But it means anybody can make it.
That is true. I'm inspiration for millions.
You are inspiration for millions. No, but you've done a great job, and I have seen your work, and you definitely are, from what I've seen, my limited knowledge, you're one of the top showrunners I've seen out there. So
thank you, Ruben. I appreciate it, man.
Appreciate you doing that, and look forward to your next adventure here.
Thank you much, buddy.
Because you make me laugh.
Thanks, bud.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for being on.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everybody, for being on our community show. We appreciate it.
Well, there you have it. That doesn't give you pause to come back and hear more. I don't know what will, as we meet our community each and every week here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center, powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.